Let us, as we draw this all together, examine our own lives. And let's begin that examination by asking, what has Jesus done for me? I can answer for myself. You answer for yourself. That He redeemed me from sin and death and hell and set me free to live a life filled with meaning, purpose, and joy.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast that you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this week's insightful message.
Good morning. Start with a little vocabulary lesson. The word extravagant, which I told your kids to ask you about, so you be prepared to give them an answer. It's a good word. We all have a basic idea of what it means, but I'll give you a little more in-depth idea. We form our English word from two Latin words. The first is extra, which we have pretty much stolen into the English language, and it means outside. When I say exhale, you know I mean to breathe out. If I say expel, you know I mean that something should be thrown out. And so the word extra from the Latin into the English means outside. The other Latin word, vagere, means to wander. And from it we take such words as vagabond, a wanderer, or vagrant, a person without a fixed abode who must then wander. We put the two words together, outside, to wander, and it means to wander outside, which doesn't mean just to take a walk in the woods. What it's referring to is that there are kind of normal, accepted, expected societal lines drawn around behaviors. And almost everybody operates within the lines. If you do something that is outside the lines, you have wandered outside the normal expectations, and so your behavior is extravagant. You have wandered outside. How many people were here for Joe and Courtney's wedding yesterday? Several of us. Okay, those of us who were here, let me ask you, did you think that the limo that Bill brought was of extravagant length? I'm just asking. I know that Bill thinks it was, because when he tried to leave the place where he picked it up, he tried to pull out the parking lot one way, and there was a little elevation that you had to go over the hump to the street, and he hung the frame trying to get on the street because it was too long, and rather than get into the danger of just teeter-tottering there, he had to back out and go out another way. And when he got here, he first came in, he said, Terry, I need some advice. Where do I park this thing? Because if I park it here, I'm not going to be able to make the turn to get out. If I park it there and there are cars parked in the normal spaces, it isn't going to be able to make any kind of turn. I mean, it was as long as a school bus and about as high as an SUV. And ended up, we parked it in the grass with a straight shot to Hill Church out there on the parking lot. Because it was of extravagant length, there are kind of normal confines for vehicles. And it turns out, Bill, there's reasons, right? Yes, there's reasons. But it was outside the lines. A couple of sermons ago, we looked at the incident which set in motion this section of Scripture which we have been considering ever since, and it was that Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. And we make the mistake we often make with Scripture. We read that passage in isolation, we move on, we don't realize it, but it is the besetting instance for everything that we have been looking at since. And it's understandable. Raising someone from the dead is an extravagant act. There are many people here who have done kind things for me. I just looked, since I picked on Bill about the length of the limo, I'll tell you something about Bill. Another time when I whined, I was whining about how every year I have to go out and clean up after those maple trees at the parsonage. And Bill showed up that year. I wasn't there. Whatever machine he had, and blew all those leaves off the lawn. So I didn't have to deal with it. That was a kind thing. That was a kind thing that Bill did. And it was in the lines. Bill owned the equipment, and it took just a while. I don't know how long it took Bill, a couple hours, whatever it took. And, you know, it was a nice act, but it was kind of in the lines. And, Gary has been kind to me when I needed mechanical work done, or on occasion. Chris has been very kind to me when my driveway has been snowy and slick, and he's come and made sure that I could get in and out. A lot of people have been kind to me. Nobody yet has given me back any family member who died. And it's not that they wouldn't, maybe, if they could, but they can't. Because there are these lines around what we can do as well. And when you raise someone who has been 4 days dead and sealed in the grave, you have wandered outside the lines. It was an extravagant action, an extravagant demonstration of Jesus' power and nature. And it was recognized as such, and we got down to the end of this passage that I read. What it says is, people were coming to see Jesus, and he was at dinner at the house of Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. And you should understand that people of means, and Lazarus was one, as we will see in due course, if they invited a special guest, say a rabbi of note, to a dinner at their house, they would hold the dinner in the courtyard, and people, curious onlookers who were not going to be participants in the meal, would be allowed to gather around and watch and listen. And people were doing that, and it said they came not for Jesus' sake only, which is to say they did come for his sake. They had heard of Jesus. They had heard of many of the things he had done. They had heard some of his teaching. But they came not for Jesus' sake only, but because they wanted to get a look at Lazarus, that man who had been 4 days dead in the grave and came out. That would be a curiosity, wouldn't it? They all wanted to see the man who had been so very dead and was now so wonderfully alive, because Jesus had done this extravagant thing. Now, this next part calls for just a little imagination, and I won't dwell on it too much because it is my imagining, but I feel pretty confident about it. It says Jesus came to the dinner, and it says Martha was serving. Well, of course she was. Everybody knows from this and other passages, Martha's bent. Martha was serving. I bet Martha cooked all day. You know, there are dinners that you set for people, and there are dinners that you set for people. But when the guy who restored your lost family member from the dead and gave him back to you, when that guy comes to dinner, you don't sort through the sealed butter tubs and say, well, this one's not green and moldy yet, we'll warm this up, you know. I'll pull that chicken that I had in the freezer from last, it's only burned just a little bit, I'll pull that out, and that's not the meal you serve for the guy who gave you back your dead family member. It says Martha served, and I bet she cooked all day and did the very best with the very finest that she had to serve Jesus, because what he had done for her and her family was so extravagant that she wanted to make an extravagant return. Now, that's my imagination, so that's all I'll say about that. But Mary is in this story too, and I don't need any imagination here. What Mary did for Jesus was extravagant. She brought a little jar, says about a pound, figure the old saying, a pint is a pound the world around, and we know from archaeology these little bottles of oil were sold in about a pint. measure, what we would call a pint. She brought about a pint of nard. Now, I did a little research. You can buy nard. It's available on Amazon. You can get it for $9 or $10 for, yeah, it is, Heather, on Amazon. Look and see. $9 or $10 for a little bottle of nard. It comes from a plant that only grows at elevations in excess of 3,000 meters, better above 5,000 meters. When the Israelites got it, they had to have it imported from Nepal or Tibet up in the Himalayan mountains. That was the nearest source of the plant from which nard is made. And I want you to picture the world in which they lived and the distance in their reckoning between Israel and the Himalayan mountains. And I want you to picture people with no modern machinery climbing to 5,000 feet of elevation and picking these plants and dragging them down and extracting from them a little bit of brown musky oil and bottling it and transporting it on a camel all the way from the upper reaches of India down to Israel, and you will understand why Mary paid more than $9 or $10 for her bottle of nard. It was a different situation. And when Judas raised his objection, which we will come to shortly, it turns out that that bottle of nard was worth 300 denarii. Now, just to cut to the chase, that's 1 year's wages. 1 year. Wages for the working man. Maybe you make a little more than the average working man. Maybe you make a little less. Maybe you're right on the nose. But however that goes, you just figure the pile of all the money you made in the last 12 months. And you spend it on a pint of something. I had a Diet Coke this morning. That probably doesn't surprise anybody. But I have one. I used it to wash down my vitamins, and then I slurped the rest of it down real quick on the way to the truck. It was a 12-ounce can. It was gone before I got here. Slurped those 12 ounces down right now. I did the figuring. Nard, by their value translated into our figures, is about $3,125 an ounce. If that Diet Coke had cost $3,125 an ounce, I'd drunk it slower. I'd probably not drunk it at all. I probably wouldn't own it at all. If I did own it, it'd be in a lockbox somewhere. Or I'd sell it. $3,125 an ounce. In the gospel, according to John, there is this word. It's the only time the word is used in the whole Bible. And we can't find, by examining the Greek literature of the age, what the word means either. It's the only time that we know in history that this Greek word is used. It's the word pistic. It says pistic nard. Now, King James cheats. They just rearrange the letters pistic to make the word spike and say spike nard. No need to explain what it means because we don't know, so it's spike nard. The New American Standard takes a stab at it and thinks that maybe it came from some unknown root that probably meant something pure, like 100% unadulterated nard. And so they put the word pure there, but they usually put it in italics, so you know that they're guessing. Some other versions guess that it was probably a famous maker, a brand name, like Fabergé nard or something. But here's what I know. $3,125 an ounce. What does pistic mean? It means, holy smokes, that's a lot of money, nard! And she poured it on Jesus' feet. Why so extravagant? Olive oil would have done. Why so extravagant? Three things I will say. One, because Jesus' gift to her and hers had been so extravagant. He had raised Lazarus from the dead. Second, because the balance of the rest of the scriptures that we read, even apart from the resurrection of Lazarus, reveals that Mary's love for Jesus was extravagant. She loved him more than she would normally love people in her society. Her love wandered outside the lines. Third, why would she use something that cost $3,125 an ounce? Probably because she didn't have anything that cost $5,000 an ounce. Or she would have used that. Or something that cost $10,000 an ounce. Or she would have used that. She used the single most precious, valuable thing she could. Extravagance. And it says that the odor of the nard filled the whole house. And it was noticed by Judas Iscariot, who cried foul. Now, we're told here that Judas has ulterior motives. One, it says that he was already intending to betray Jesus. And two, it says that he was a thief, an embezzler, that he kept the money box tradition. Mark will know this from our time in Columbia, all the way back to the Old Testament. You got a box with a hole in it. People dropped their offerings in. That's how people supported Jesus. Put it in the box. As Judas kept the box, and he was stealing money out of the box. And being a thief, and keeping the box, and already intending to betray Jesus for what turned out to be 30 pieces of silver, it is in his interest to make sure that box is as full as possible before Jesus goes away. And the nard was worth 10 times the price of the betrayal. But let's set all that aside for a moment. But set Judas's ulterior motives, of which we have been advised over here on the other end of the room, and let's just take his objection seriously for a moment. Are you kidding me? 300 denarii worth, and you're just pouring it out on him when olive oil would... Do you know how many poor people you could feed for 300 denarii 1 year's wage? Wasted. Jesus said, let her keep it for my burial, by which I usually take... She hadn't used it all, or at least not yet. Let her keep it for my burial, because the poor you have with you always. I'll be gone soon. True words. Let us, as we draw this all together, examine our own lives. And let's begin that examination by asking, what has Jesus done for me? I can answer for myself. You answer for yourself. But he redeemed me from sin and death and hell, and set me free to live a life filled with meaning, purpose, and joy. He has been the source of the most important other relationships in my life. He has been the glue that holds my family together. He has been the one who enables me to carry on the work that I do. These things Jesus has done for me, what has he done for you? I bet that if you begin to list it, you will see that his gifts to you are extravagant. They are completely outside the lines of what anybody in normal society might be expected to do for you. Yet Jesus has. Second, to what degree do we love him? Or do we just admire him a little? Or do we just like him? Do we kind of think like we share his values? Or do we love him like Mary loved him, with an extravagant love that goes completely outside the bounds of how you might be expected in polite society to feel about any other individual? And then, let us ask, how do we give? People have come to me at times, more or less new in their relationship to Jesus Christ, and they've said it this way. They said, how much does a Christian have to give? And I say, you're asking the question wrong. The question is, to what degree are we privileged to participate in the kingdom work of Jesus Christ? Our giving should be extravagant. That is, outside the lines of normal societal expectation for giving to a cause. Extravagant givers. How should we love? And that is to say, how much should we, with goodwill, desire the blessing of all the people around us? We should love extravagantly, way outside the lines of what might be expected to be your normal societal duty. And how should we live? We should live extravagantly. No limits. Don't worry about being called a fanatic, a weirdo, too religious. Our lives should be lives filled with unbounded energy and dedication to the cause of Christ. We should live extravagantly because we serve an extravagant Lord and because we are surrounded by extravagant need and because eternity is so very extravagant. Final consideration. Judas was hung up on the difference between an extravagant gift to the person of Jesus Christ and feeding the hungry, again setting aside his known ulterior motives. And Jesus said, poor you have with you always. Not so me. And then he died and was buried and was raised from the dead. And then he ascended. And he is not here now for me to pour nard upon his feet or for me to drop gold through the slot in the top of the box for him personally. And yet, I believe that we must live in such a way that demonstrates that my allegiance is not to Indian Run Christian Church, but to Jesus Christ. How do I bless him personally, extravagantly, And he closes, Jesus does, the loop that so worried Judas and has so worried so many others. If you read the 25th chapter of the Gospel according to Matthew, Jesus gives two parables and a third thing that may or may not legitimately be called a parable. But the third thing is this, he says, on the day of judgment, God will sort people into two groups, sheep and goats, the right hand and the left, and it will all be on this basis. He says, you saw me hungry, and either you did feed me or you didn't. You saw me naked, and either you did clothe me or you didn't. You saw me sick, and you comforted me or not. You saw me in prison, and you visited me and worked with me, or you left me to my own devices. And those on the right and those on the left will answer, but when did we see you hungry or thirsty or naked or sick or imprisoned? And the Lord will answer, inasmuch as you did these things to the least of these, my brethren, you have done them to me. Dear Reverend Bailey and congregation, thank you so very much for sharing your wonderful fresh produce this past summer. Our families enjoyed all of it. Our volunteers and staff realize the undertaking it is to plant, maintain, and harvest such a large garden. Your efforts to feed your neighbors in need is applauded. May we still bless Jesus Christ personally? Yes, we may. And we should work. Live. Love. And give. Extravagantly. To do so. Maybe you haven't found that extravagant niche yet. Maybe you're still coloring inside lines. And maybe you need to make a change and reach deep and call on the Holy Spirit of God to raise it up a notch and become an extravagant follower of Jesus Christ. If so, I'm going to invite you to pledge yourself to that step today.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church by visiting our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. That's www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.